Hello and welcome to Wise Women, The Vicar and the Witch. I'm Maggie Whitehouse and I'm the Vicar.
And I'm Susie Crockford and I'm the Witch. We are perceived, perhaps, as being on opposite ends of a spectrum, but we're friends and we see the common threads of our different experience of the sacred. So please join us as we discuss
life, the universe and everything. Hello again.
Hello.
Are we still on spells?
Oh, I think so. I think we could get weeks and weeks and weeks out of spells. I'm intrigued by when we actually finished recording last week and ran out of time completely. You were talking about we're talking about the spell of the material, and for you that brought up you being a Franciscan friar, which I must say was a swerve ball for me. please explain.
Well, okay. I'm a Christian minister currently working or not working on the West Devon Methodist circuit, but I'm ordained into an independent church by a minister, a bishop who was a Catholic priest who went into the apostolic liberal Catholic branch of Christianity and is now actually an independent. So he's sort of stepping out. But our church is technically called the Flower of Carmel. And Carmelites are part of the Franciscan order. Mm-hmm. And the whole thing about that, we've got a Pope at the moment called Pope Francis, who I think is a thoroughly good guy and doing the best he possibly can in the situations, because, God, he's under spell of Vatican, hugely under the spell of Vatican, but he's still doing some good work. But the St. Francis is many people's favourite saint, and deservedly so, for many, many reasons. So we regard ourselves as Franciscans, which is basically a mystic without a monastery. Because St. Francis, when he was going into his holy work, wanted to know whether he should enclose himself in a monastery or whether he should walk the streets and help people. And the answer was both. Mm-hmm. So you can do either as a Franciscan. You can be an enclosed nun or monk. And in fact, the nuns live in monasteries, not convents, which is interesting. I don't know why that is. And when I was quite young and being sort of spiritually awakened in my teens, or whether probably because I couldn't get any sex, I don't know. part of me thought I wouldn't mind being an enclosed Franciscan nun. Something about it called to me. So there was, I don't know why, it's probably because I couldn't get David Jackson down the road. But and thank God for that. But moving swiftly on. So our church is based on Franciscan principles, and the Franciscan principle is that you live lightly on the earth, you acknowledge the divinity of the Great Mother. So this is why we're talking, because I'm not your everyday Orthodox Christian. But I am truly Christian in that I follow the teachings of Jesus, which are the same as Francis tried to follow, which was to... He got his conversion because he was afraid of lepers. He was actually a soldier and very rich, of a rich family.
Wow.
And he tried to get out the first time because by nicking some money to look after himself, which didn't work out very well. But the second time he realised that his great fear was about the lepers, and through his conversion he felt great love for them, the outcast. And that, of course, is entirely the teachings, if you actually read the Gospels, about Jesus. He was all for the outcast, all for the women, all for the ones with lepers, all for those who were possessed. And when you talk about demons in early Christianity, it's people under spells. They're under the spell of being ill, or the spell of being worthless, or the spell of being wrong, or all sorts of different spells. And we actually have a guy in Throwley called John Wadlow, who's a friend of mine. He was the one who helped us get moved to Devon in the first place. And he undoes spells. He's a right-wing Buddhist, but he's got a technique that undoes spells. And it's quite extraordinary how he can do that. And I've gone off on a different thing now, but I think it's important to tell you about John Wadlow, because you'll see people from all over the world if they come to Throwley. And with a meld of kinesiology and EFT, emotional freedom technique, he finds the main thing that has that person under thrall, and through EFT he helps them remove it.
Wow.
And I have seen so many people, mostly women with fibromyalgia or some ME or something like that, go to John and have the pain removed. But they remove it themselves by working with him, finding that enthrallment and doing a little bit of work to remove it. And I know one lady who's this is always coming back to spells. I'll get back to the Franciscans in a minute, I promise. Well, maybe I won't. And never promise. Never promise on the word pass. I rescind that promise. Anyway, one lady who went to him who'd had fibro and diabetes 2 and depression and all sorts of things, and he located in her what, just by talking to her for an hour about everything. And she'd had a cousin who died very young at 14, and she'd always tried to be the replacement for this cousin. And that's a spell.
Yeah.
And she couldn't do it, of course. And eventually she ended up in pain and not working for a long time and utterly exhausted. She had two sessions with John, and she's not been in pain for 3.5 years.
Wow, fantastic.
Now, she won't go back to John to have the tiredness taken away, because she needs the tiredness, because if she doesn't have that, she's got no excuse for looking after her aged parents.
Ouch.
So doesn't that make it so complex?
Yes.
How the spells are. But she's much better.
Yeah.
She's much better, but she doesn't want to take that next spell. And you actually have to respect that. But moving back, or unless you want to take that one up. Do you want to take that up?
Well, just that what immediately occurred to me was, wow, how many Johns would it take to remove from our culture the spell that we all live under, that is this idea that somehow matter and spirit are disconnected, and that we live in a world where the beauty that is the created world is a series of resources which we can plunder at our will.
Mm.
And that if we could make a new spell or return to that most ancient spell that says that the earth is our mother, and that we depend upon her for literally everything, our breath, our life, our body, our food, our everything, you know. And if you know anything at all about biology, then surely you're in no doubt at all as to how utterly dependent we are upon the earth, and how we are simply a part of the earth. We're an animal. And if you know anything about spirituality in the true sense, and in, you know, connection with spirits rather than necessarily religions. Not that I'm saying religions don't know about it, but
you're probably
not all,
right.
Well, not all practitioners of religions know about spirituality or about listening to the spirits. But that from either of those two standpoints, it's really freaking obvious that we need to respect that which, you know, our lives depend upon, and treat her with beauty and grace and all the rest of it. And then there's this bizarre worm of a story in the middle that does have us totally in its thrall, that says that we are separate from each other, from it, from the rest of the you know, kingdoms that live and breathe and scuttle about, or all the green ones, or the...
Because we're superior.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, St. Francis was very anti-materialistic. I think he probably went possibly a little bit too far. He actually went blind because of the illnesses he brought on himself through starvation. But the principle was good, which was that you manifest exactly what you need and no more. One of the things about COVID-19, it has made a lot of people aware of the things they don't need.
Yeah. Well, and aware of the things they do
need. Oh, yes.
I don't think we've ever been in a society ever before that's so clear about how much we need community, how much we need each other, how much we need kindness.
Mm-hmm.
In Britain, it's tempting to say, so I'm going to say it anyway, how much we need the NHS to be funded properly, respected properly, how what an incredible gift the NHS has been, and how precipitously close we stand on the edge of losing it, and that... You know, please don't take your eye off that ball. But that also, that COVID-19's also shown us how much power there really is to make change. You know, again, I think we've discussed this before on here, but everyone was saying, oh dear, climate change. One of the most terrible things is all the aeroplanes, and we can't possibly stop all the aeroplanes. And then COVID-19 comes along and we stop all the aeroplanes.
Yes.
Hello, it's entirely possible.
Yes. But it's about economics.
Yes.
And when President Clinton was elected, they had a great big notice on the wall for all his campaigners, which it was just said, "The economy, stupid."
The economy is stupid?
No,
or the
stupid,
economy
to stupid? You, stupid. What's this about? It's about the economy, stupid. People want more money in their pockets so that they can buy more things.
Yeah.
And the more acquisitive we get, the more we disconnect.
Yeah.
Because we have to have more and better, new and better. We can't sit in the peace and the quiet. St. Francis' first sermon was to a tree full of birds.
Like his style.
And what his sermons were was he told things what they were.
Okay.
He acknowledged what they were. And his sermon was, "Birds, I know you are part of the divine. I am acknowledging you. Do you know how special you are? Do you know how sacred you are? Do you know that you are divine?"
Oh, my kind of sermon.
Yes.
I sing that song every morning. I go out and I sing my Blackbird song and I sing, I'm sure I've sang it a few weeks ago on this very podcast, so I won't.
No, you didn't.
Are you sure?
I'm quite sure.
Oh, okay.
Because I missed it.
That was on the talking stick thing then.
Yeah.
Okay, so each morning I go
She's
out.
She's been unfaithful. She went on another podcast. Moving on.
I'm sorry. Not. So each morning I go out and I sing a song which I call the Blackbird Song. And it's called the Blackbird Song because the spirits gave me the name Blackbird many, many, many years ago as a first step into a way of understanding the thread that I'm here to be. And it begins and it began just with me going along naming everything. So I'd go, "Blackbird is singing, singing, singing a song of love. Blackbird is singing love to oak and love to thorn. Blackbird is singing love to bracken and to bramble." And it goes on and on and on, naming everything that I see, which was had the beautiful kind of sideways thing of making me aware of those beings that I didn't have a name for. And so then it would become in the moment a kind of praise song of you, the little blue shining faced one with yellow in the middle. And then I'd go home and I'd find out that it was called Jamanda Speedwell.
Yes.
Or whatever. And so from that point of view, beautiful. But also it's then kind of evolved into more of a song for not the naming of things and not love for those things. I mean, yes, absolutely love for those things, but gratitude that the divine has chosen to show up on this day as a rose,
yes,
or as an oak tree,
yes,
or as the song of the blackbird.
Yes.
And that my endless, ecstatic delight in that comes out, bubbles out of me each morning as a song. And that, so I love that. That really touches me, that he stood there in front of a tree full of birds and said, "Thank you."
Yes. Yes. That's fascinating, because you do it in the morning, I do it at night.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm called to do it now. It's sort of, come on, Maggie, come on, do it. Or my spiritual name is Esther, because I was starting to learn this stuff when I was married to a Jewish guy. And you have to, if he sings the Haftarah in the synagogue, he has to name his wife, and she has to have a Jewish name. And the name given to me was Esther, which is a whole story from the Old Testament, which is a very powerful one for women and spirituality, which we can go into another day, I hope. But no, my bishop did say to me when I moved down here, "Make sure you talk to the divas."
Good man.
And talk to them at night because they come out of the trees then.
Uh-huh.
And I was still at the stage where I was going, well, they're not going to talk to me, are they? Why would they want to talk to me? Yeah. But I did. I was walking specifically because I got ill very swiftly after I came down here. And part of me was saying, "Why here? I moved to paradise. Why here?" And the answer was very clear. Because you've moved to paradise, you're going to meet the people who can help you sort this.
Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't have met them where you were. Come on, get a backbone. And so I would walk my dog, one of my dogs, late at night before going to bed, because I was eating keto, you know, eating very no carbs at all. And I had to exercise for half an hour to use up that energy. And I didn't even notice I was getting slim in those days. But I just said hello, and I would say greetings to the naiads and the dryads and the spirits and the sprites and the fairies and the this. And it got to the point where if I don't name them when I go out, they ask to be named. And the trees want to be named. And even if it's a tall tree over the left by that gate, that's a name. And there seems to be something about the human ability to name and to praise, which is valid and important, totally, because we are part of the Creator and conscious of being conscious. But I do a benediction now. Whenever I go out, usually after a bath now, because I don't necessarily walk at night. At the moment, it's still not dark when I'm walking late. Mm. And the benediction is, in case anybody wants to use it, is I name them all. I start off with creatures of fire, air, water, earth, mm-hmm. naiads, dryads, devas, spirits, fairies, elves, gnomes, pixies. I try to go through all the names that I know of. Mm-hmm. And then I say, may you be blessed to the full extent you may receive the benediction of the All Holy One. Mm. Which gives them the level of blessing that is appropriate for them to receive, mm-hmm. Without my input saying how much they should have. Does that make any sense
to
you?
Yes, yeah, it does.
Totally. And they love it.
Yeah, of course.
They love it. And I find it fascinating also when I'm gardening, because I will quite often get a spirit, and it feels like a spirit, and I may be making this up, but I can't afford to imagine, to assume that it's not real, ever. Mm. So saying, why are you doing that? Mm-hmm. And also telling them, I'm going to be trimming this back. I'm going to be weeding. Why?
Yeah.
Because this is the garden that I live in, and it's a strange human thing. I'd like it a bit neater, and I want to create space for different flowers. Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. So there's the whole of nature we know is conscious, but it's got these layers of consciousness. And I'm quite sure St. Francis was very aware of them. And one of my mentors now, Father Richard Rohr from Albuquerque, New Mexico, he does a wonderful daily meditation, which he sends into your emails, which is breathtaking, about universal Christ, the universal Christ, mm-hmm. the Word.
Yeah.
And Julian of Norwich, you know, this...
I was about to mention her too.
Yes, she called Christ the Mother.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's there. It's trying to bleed through into this patriarchal aspect of Christianity. And it always has been there. But St. Francis, you know, he's just the perfect saint in this respect. And I don't know if you ever read Name of the Rose or watched the TV series or the movie. But the Dominicans and the Franciscans came together in quite a battle in the Middle Ages about who would be the driving force in Christianity. Mm-hmm. And the Dominicans were very poshly dressed and the Franciscans were poor. Mm. And the Dominicans won, which you can see quite clear evidence of. And one of the funniest things Richard Rohr always says is sometimes he wears his friar's robe, because a friar is somebody who goes on the road, right, rather than the monk. And he says, you may have noticed that Franciscan robes are brown, because they copied St. Francis, but actually he had an ordinary linen robe. It was just dirty.
Excellent.
Excellent. But yes, why are we so materialistic? What is this spell of more and different and not necessarily better? Because when you're under the thrall of the material world, and as a journalist who did radio and TV and had to do public appearances, only very minor ones, but you still had to, and you were always buying clothes to wear to the office. You didn't wear the same outfit twice in a week.
Wow.
You had to have a different outfit every single day, so people would assume you washed it or sent it to the dry cleaners every day. You didn't wear dirty clothes, especially the men did. The men wore the same suits, they changed their shirt. But you were always buying clothes and you were always going out to shop more. And it was a panacea. It sort of helped ease the pain. Mm. But because I wasn't happy at work, I was a bit of a wimp and I was over my head all the time, drowning the whole time and working as hard as I could to hide that fact. Because I wanted to be a features writer, but I didn't have the courage to say I wanted to be a features writer, so I was a hard news writer.
Right.
I ended up doing Crown Courts, which actually I did love. I loved the legal process, and quite often you could help people behind the scenes there, but we won't go into that because it was probably illegal, but it worked. But I used to find that quite often, and certainly still today, I bought the same things. What, it was the excitement of the new. I'd buy something that was exactly the same style as something else I had. So I wasn't even buying something new. I was buying new and improved, which is how marketing gets us.
Yeah.
It's the same but better.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And marketing is a huge spell.
Yes.
Advertising is a spell.
Yep.
And we have this strange... I'm going to tell the story of my friend Bernadette, which is somehow relevant. I think you'll see how it's relevant. But she's the youngest of seven sisters.
Mm-hmm.
And no, she isn't a witch. She should be, but she isn't. And she was quite a lot younger than the other sisters. And her, when her mother was out of names, they were a Catholic family, as you can probably intuit. And she, all the girls had three or four different names.
Mm.
And so she said to the daughters, you name the baby.
Mm-hmm.
And they couldn't make up their minds. The one thing they could agree on, the only thing they agreed on, was they couldn't stand the name Bernadette.
That's hilarious.
And after about a month, and you have to register the child's name after a certain amount of time, the only thing they came up with was Bernadette, because they could not think of anything else.
How did Bernadette feel about being called Bernadette?
Oh, she changed the name later.
Oh.
But I think there's a point to that, which is that the Bernadette, the name Bernadette, they all didn't like it, but it was one thing they agreed on, so it became a spell.
Mm.
And our marketing makes us all agree that we need to buy stuff.
Well, yeah, yeah. Luckily, not all of us. But back to names. Actually, names are spells, and they are a very, very powerful spell that your parents cast upon you when you are born.
Yes.
And the meaning of your name. If you, anyone who's listening, I challenge you, go and find out the true meaning of your name and see if you are that. Because 99 times out of 100, you exactly will be.
Mm.
And so the naming of a child should be, as it is in you know, most of the cultures that we choose to call indigenous, it's a really big deal.
Yeah.
And it's not down to the parents, it's down to the person who is the most able to listen to the spirits and to listen to the truth of what thread is this child here to weave? What are they carrying? What is theirs to do?
Yes, and some cultures...
And then we will name them the name of that thing.
Sorry, bad man has interrupted you. There's also an indigenous culture where there's a song for a child when a mother wants to conceive, when a woman wants to conceive. She sits under the tree till she gets the song. And she calls the soul into that song. And the song is sung by the village to the child when it's born and as it's growing up. And also, if it does something really wrong or really bad, it's brought to the centre of the village and surrounded. And they sing its song to it to remind it who it is.
Mm.
And so the song is a name, obviously.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, what does Susan mean? Is it Susan?
Susan apparently comes from Shoshona, the meaning of which is Lily. The meaning of which is flower of peace.
Yes.
And my second name is Alessina, which comes from Alessandrina, which comes from Alessandro, Alexander, defender of men. And so I am flower of peace, defender of men. And I, as the mother of three sons and a girl who went to a boys' school, I feel like I stand in that thread quite literally, but also take it to mean men as in mankind, as in humans.
Yeah.
And I do want to defend us, mostly from ourselves, frankly. But, yeah, to stand in defence of all that is good and beautiful and exquisite and authentic in what it is to be in this human animal body carrying this piece of the divinity that is our soul. I really, really feel like I stand up for that and stand in that name. And what intrigues me hilariously is that every other Susan, Susie, Suzanne, Susanna, blah, 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 there's one under every bloody stone if you're born in, I think it was the most popular name the year I was born, is that there is a hilarious similarity in all of us in that there's something to be said for sensible Susan, sexy Susan, says she, claiming it. And that there is a kind of sensible kindness to every single Susan I know.
Yes. That makes a lot of sense, actually, yes. Yeah, Yeah. Well, the nearest to me is Margaret. I am a Maggie, and I'm very grateful for that. I'm Maggie with a Y, M-A-G-G-Y. There's a legend in my family that my father saw the name written on the back of a lavatory door in Towin, and he liked it. Which certainly stops the arrogance of it around. But the root of it would be Margaret.
Yeah.
And the meaning of Margaret is pearl.
Mm-hmm.
Which means you make something beautiful out of grit.
Mm.
And I think that is appropriate too.
Mm.
And the second name is Anne. And Anne, I don't know what Anne means, but what it means to me is it was the mother of the Virgin Mary, was Anne.
Mm.
So it's mother of the divine feminine. So I'm
defining... Gosh, yes, you're certainly living those two threads.
Well, thank you very much. I'm doing my best. Yeah. But certainly the pearl really resonates because there's grit... in my life, if there's grit in my life, what can I make from this?
Mm.
And I'm also a Taurus, which is very practical.
Yeah.
So it works very well, yes.
Yeah. But I remember once, if you're interested in the spell of a name, I encourage you to go and work with the wonderful being that is Jill Purse, who does lots of family constellation work, amongst other things, and works with the spells of our names. And the spells of second names as well as first names, so whatever you call those, surnames, and with the ways in which, what do you call the obligations, if you like, are carried down the generations and are often held within the name.
Yes.
And yeah, it is absolutely amazing, but it's something that I could kind of waffle about, but she really knows about. And she has so many stories of, you know, here's a name, here's what they were doing, here's the way in which they were living out what effectively, you know, to use a word which I always hesitate to use, but I mean it literally, and I also possibly don't mean what you think I mean when I use the word curse.
Mm.
And I don't mean you, but people listening. In that, if you can divide the polar oppositions of that which we carry into blessings and curses, then I mean it like that. I don't mean, you know, deliberately inflicted bad spells, although sometimes they are. Mm. They really are.
Oh,
we
yeah.
carry down our generations or within our names the deliberate infliction of malign intent. But that more often than not, they're not deliberately inflicted, but they are nevertheless inflicted and carried.
Yes.
And that, so, you know, just for a laugh, why not? But also with serious intent, find out what your name means and then find out, are there ways in which that is true for you, or are there ways in which it is an invitation for you?
Mm.
And are there ways in which you can make whatever the truths and invitations are a blessing and not a blight?
And it's quite often you find that people who've gone through crises change their names.
Mm.
Because they are a new person.
Yeah.
Or they need to move. But if you want to change your name to something like Grace or something like that, you have to follow with actions.
Yeah.
Otherwise it won't work. But yeah, I can understand why people do change names. Mm. Absolutely. But curses, I came to you when I was ill, and one of the things we found in me was a family curse, if you remember. I don't suppose you do, because
no,
like
I don't.
Me...
I'm sorry!
I do this with clients too. It's really important you forget, actually.
Yeah.
Incredibly important that you forget. I have a notebook, by all means, if the person's going to come back, so you can refer back, but it's a gross intrusion on other people's lives if you know all their issues. But
yeah.
Basically, the situation with me was that there was a family curse in me which looked like a grey cobra down in the gonadic area, which you found and liberated. And partly it came from my mother was probably an abused child.
Mm.
And her mother was probably an abused child and all sorts of things going back that way. And I knew when I got married to Jonathan and we were considering having children, I went into blank terror.
Wow.
Absolute blank terror when I thought I was pregnant. Turned out lucky I wasn't.
Mm.
Or maybe the soul left having taught me the lesson, which is entirely possible. And I went into absolute terror because I knew I would never become me, because I would be devoted, I would have to subjugate myself.
Service to a little being.
Which I know that sounds terrible and most people really, really want to be mothers. But I remember going away and sitting in meditation by Edgbaston Reservoir in Birmingham and saying, what's going on? What's going on? And it came in and said, you're here to stop that curse. Because you will strike a child if you have one.
Wow. Yeah.
So stop it. Don't do it.
Yeah.
So I didn't.
Yeah.
Yeah. And when I came to you and I told you about that, you forgot all about it. Oh my God. Told you about that. You actually said something which was breathtaking, which was, and that's probably one of the reasons why you've got the disease, because it was a curse that you could just hand on to your daughters. And get it out, hot potato, pass it on.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So in some ways, by being astonishingly selfish, according to certain members of my family, by choosing not to have children and enforcing that, I ended a curse.
Yeah.
So I'm glad I did.
Yeah,
It had a cost.
Yeah.
But nobody, I have no bloodline. I have stepchildren, which is lovely, and an adopted son who came to me as adult. So I didn't know to do the baby thing. But sorry, I haven't got that. And sometimes the power of saying no, coming from the gut instinct, is the releasing of the curse. Because you kind of know you've got it somewhere. If there's a family curse. There's some kind of, there will be an inkling, and it might even be in your name.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't think of any that are. But
no.
Yes, it might easily be. Or, yeah, it might easily be. I mean, there's one of the intriguing things that's in our names, which I'm not suggesting remotely is any kind of a curse, but that all the kind of, there's amongst the older Scottish and Irish names, many of the, you know, for example, O'Leary, as far as I understand it, just to randomly pick one that I, you know less than nothing about, let me be clear. It just means of Leary.
Yes.
Of the place of.
Yes.
And likewise, Mac, I believe, is of the clan of. And then there's another one which means bastard. Oh, Fitz. Bastard
Fitz,
son of.
Yeah. If it's got a small letter afterwards. I had a friend called Joanna Fitzgerald with a capital G, which meant legitimate.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I don't know. That's just what she told me, and I believed her.
But, the spells of our names are also the spells of our past and the ways in which we are connected to land or disconnected from land, or ways in which we are embodying a particular attribute or carrying a particular skill. And, you know, bearing in mind that, for example, Smith, it was likely if your father was a Smith that you too would be a Smith, because that was the skill you had access to learning, unless you had a massive calling to do something else.
Or you'd become Smithson if you went off and did something else, probably.
Yeah, quite likely.
Yeah.
And that the ways in which our histories are carried in our names as a culture is totally fascinating. And, of course, contains so much power.
I had an interesting one when I was younger, because Mary Whitehouse was still alive. Some of you may never have heard of Mary Whitehouse, but she was the person who ran something called the National Viewers and Listeners Association. And she campaigned against the BBC about sex and violence and swearing on the television. Mm-hmm. Always only the BBC, because it was publicly funded. And she was bonkers and right, because it hasn't got any better.
What, sex, violence and swearing?
Yes.
I'd say it's got significantly worse.
We actually now have a spell in our media that young women are expected to have anal sex.
What?
It's in movies like Kingsman and things like that, where the girl says to the hero, if you save the world, you can have my ass.
I don't think that means anal sex, Maggie.
It does.
Does it?
Oh, yeah, it does, because the final shot of the movie is clear on that.
Are you sure it doesn't just mean that particular style that is the presenting of the ass? I can't quite believe we're going here, but anyway.
We'll have to watch the movie.
I'm pretty sure that that's an Americanism that just means
No, in this particular case, it actually was that, because I remember looking at it and going, what? But I do know from a friend who's a nurse that the amount of perforated anuses in young ladies is getting very serious in A&E because it's now expected.
My goodness. I am a little innocent living here in my
Well, I was
cottage.
Very innocent until I talked to my friend Pauline, who's the nurse, and sort of said, it's awful because it's now expected of us. And this, I can't remember what the thread of this was, of course. And here we go again, going around in circles. I've brought in anal sex. And I would like to point out, I talked to another friend of mine who's had anal sex with her husband, and I said, please talk to me about this. And she said, it's fine, it can give you great pleasure, it's got to be done very carefully, very gently, with lots of excitement and lube, you know, excitement from lube from excitement or whatever, and you've got to do it carefully and it can be wonderful, but not just as an automatic thing.
Yeah, yeah. Well, sex of any variety surely must be done with both parties, not just consenting, but properly up for it.
But this is another thing of the spells that we're under. That you have to have sex before you're ready, probably. I'm sounding like a terrible prude because I went through all that and I had sex before I was ready. I lost my virginity. I'm getting terribly personal here and it's getting a bit late. I lost my virginity because one of my friends at school told me I wouldn't be the first to lose my virginity.
What, so you did it just to defy them?
And then I never told them.
Well...
I mean, how mixed up is that?
Yeah.
But it was part of the thrall that I was under in of lack of self-esteem. And I wonder if it just coming back to this thing of materialism, which we're at, the power of names, the power of the material, the power of advertising, it's always going to be the saving grace if we will stop and take a Sabbath.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Stop and take stock. Stock.
Stock, yes.
Stock. And yes, have a moment to think and have a moment also to disconnect from all the ways in which our senses are assaulted by the demands of the material world.
Yes.
And that, yeah, if we can to properly turn it off, whatever it is, that thing that's on, if we turn it off, then we've got an opportunity to meet ourselves, to meet the sacred, to meet, you know, the butterflies and the roses and the sun and the rain and everything else, rather than the jibber-jabber of that which is basically designed to distract us from what could be viewed as the misery of our existence, because we do, you know, I'm speaking very generalizations and not actually personally when I say the misery of our existence, but it seems like that's a kind of... A common claim is that to live in separation, to live in the consumer society, to live in the place where I have to get up because I have to go to work and I have to go to work because I have to pay the bills and I have to pay the bills because I have got, you know, five children and massive bills and blah, blah, blah. And please don't imagine that I'm saying there's anything wrong at all with having five children, you know, whatever. No, but that hamster wheel of terror is...
Yes.
I really don't think that if people, you know, even if genuinely you have to work 7 days a week because otherwise you won't keep a roof over your head, there's got to be some time when you can just turn it all off and go and sit quietly with, even if all it is the dandelion growing up through the cracks in the pavement, and just to be with the other than human world, and a world which is not saying buy more, buy a bigger one, buy a better one, buy this, buy that, dudley da, but instead saying smell me, look at me, see me, touch me, listen to me.
Yeah, because if you won't do that, you have put no value on yourself.
Yeah.
And if you don't put value on yourself, you are of no value to others.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, ain't that the truth?
I think we're done. Thank you so much for listening.
Thank you, thank you. And
thank you for your kind comments as well. And constructive criticism is also welcome, because if you want to discuss certain things or talk back to us, please do on the podcast comments thing. That's great. But thank you very much for listening. And if you enjoy this, please share it. Thank you.
Bye.